Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in the shoe, but the sun is a great fire.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
Hello, Ben. Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone. Indeed, as ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you wherever you are in the universe. And we'll get straight to it. Of course, this program is also available as a podcast. And we have the live stream on dublincityfm.ie. So, no excuses. John.
Yes.
The planets.
Yes,
not overly exciting this week, but give us a rundown on what to see in the sky with regard to the planets.
Okay, just firstly to mention the International Space Station. The 16th is when it comes back into our skies again, so that's next week, and the time for that is 7:24 p.m. All month, in fact, it's not going to be very, very high. It comes in at 10 degrees nearly for the 2 weeks that it's in our skies, and the first one's only a minute long, and then it creeps up and down, that sort of things. But we will tell you more about that later on. So just put that in your diary for the 16th at 7:24 p.m. Next week. Mercury shines low in the dark this week to the lower left of the bright Venus. So if you can see Venus, you have a bit of a chance to see Mercury as well if you haven't seen Mercury. Venus, -4.0, is a very bright morning star in the southeast during dawn. And unfortunately, it's getting lower every week. Nearby is not just Mercury, but the sparkly orange Antares, magnitude +1. So if you're looking for that particular star, 7 degrees below or to the lower right of Venus on the morning, around the 12th, it sneaks from about 7 degrees to 9 degrees between the 5th and the 12th, and we're nearly all there, so it's getting higher to Venus's right. Mars barely peaks over the eastern horizon in bright dawn at the moment, although it is going to get there, Ben, because it's creeping into our skies. We haven't seen it for months now at this stage. And it's out of reach just at the moment, probably till the, I wonder, is the end of January on for the next 5 months. It's going to creep slowly into our dawn skies, which would be nice to see it again. Although it's a long, long way away from us at the moment, it's nearly at the far side of the sun. Jupiter, on the other hand, it's a fine sight at the moment. It's up at the moment. I did get a glimpse of it earlier on. And I got a good glimpse of it last evening as well. -2.5 in Aries is where it is. It's the bright dot dominating the high south early in these evenings. And stands at its highest soon after dark and then starts to creep out down again as well. So it's a good sight and the one that we really will see first in the skies. Saturn, magnitude +0.1. And it's still easy enough to see it, strangely enough, and it's getting lower in the southeast during and after dusk. And do not confuse it with the Formalhaut or Formalho, similarly bright, just two fists to the right, or should I say the lower left of Saturn. Uranus, 5.6, quite dim, as always. Neptune, even fainter at magnitude, 7.9. And they're two difficult ones to see. And as I say, I've only ever seen Uranus. I haven't seen Neptune yet, but one of these days I'll sneak out and have a sneaky look.
Track it down.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the moon yesterday morning and coming in through the N2. It was straight ahead, and it was that very, very thin thumbnail, and it was a beautiful sight because you get the sort of the bluey dawn sky in behind it rather than the black. And it was a fine sight as well. I was looking for it this morning, but unfortunately it was a bit cloudy, so we didn't get a chance to see it. But it's going to become a new moon, I think.
Yes. It's getting smaller and smaller and nearer to the sun. In fact, the new moon you mentioned will be next Thursday, the 11th, which is only 2 days away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. It's at just about midday, to be, if you want to be precise about it. But at the moment, it's a 3.9% waning crescent phase, but it's not currently above our horizon here in Dublin at the moment, but it will rise tomorrow morning, just after 8:30. At that stage, it'll be down to 1.9%. So it rises just a couple of minutes, about 4 minutes before the sun. Mm-hmm. So it's, mm-hmm. yeah, practically, I don't think that's possible to see, really.
Yeah. It's always interesting to see how quickly we can get to see the first new moon of the month as well. And we get a good view. It is, if you haven't seen it, it's a fantastic sight to see, because you get this, as I mentioned, the thumbnail in the other direction. If it's going away from us, it's two different directions for the sun shining on the face of the moon as well.
Yes, indeed. As I say, yes, it'll rise at 8:30 tomorrow morning, and it will be due south, and at its highest at just after 11:30 tomorrow, it'll be down to 1.6% phase. Really, really impossible, I would think. And when it sets tomorrow, it'll actually be down to 1.3% phase. That'll be at just after 2:30 in the afternoon. And as we mentioned, it will disappear down to a 0% phase, of course, by definition, when we get to the full moon on Thursday, the 11th at midday. The sun, on the other hand, rises tomorrow in Dublin at 8:36 a.m., which is 3 minutes earlier than a week ago, and a local noon in Dublin when the sun passes the meridian and is due south of us will be at 12:32 p.m., which is 3 minutes later than a week ago. And then we have sunset is 10 minutes later than a week ago at 4:28 p.m. tomorrow. And from then until 5:10, we'll have civil twilight. And from then until just about 5:55, we'll have nautical twilight. And from then until 6:36, we shall have astronomical twilight. And after that, of course, we'll have, officially it'll be nighttime. I was just looking, it was a bit of a clear sky this evening, John, at 5:15. And I was looking to the west and I thought to myself, when was the last time you saw actual, so bright in the west, relatively bright in the western sky?
Yeah, so
at 5:15 in the evening.
I know astronomical twilight must be disappearing soon. It'd be another month or so, would it, or even less? I wonder. It's the 6:12:18 rule, isn't it? We have astronomical.
Oh yeah, civil twilight is when the sun is 6 degrees below the horizon, and nautical twilight is when it's 12 degrees and below. Astronomical twilight is when it's 18 degrees.
Yep, for those of you who want to know. And for those of you who don't know where to see the planets, just follow the path of the sun and the moon, and within a few degrees, they all pass in the same path, up or down a couple of degrees here and there, but that's where to look. Just we all know where the sun rises and sets. We all know where the moon rises and sets, and all the other planets as well, from Mercury all the way out to Neptune, and might even be Pluto.
They're on that line. We call it the ecliptic. I have a good pointer for Saturn on Sunday in the evening. If you're out and about and we have a clear sky, Saturn at magnitude 1.0 will be 4 degrees to the right of the moon. It's not very bright now, but you'll see something 4 degrees, which is about half the width of your fist, but two or three fingers wide at arm's length, and to the right of the moon, that bright little dot is Saturn.
The little dot, yes, indeed. Now, I suppose we have to mention the failure of the private US lander, the moon lander, which was, I think it is facing a sort of a near certain failure at this stage. Seemingly, when it went up, it suffered a critical loss of fuel. And this was in a major blow to America's hopes of placing its first robot on the lunar surface in 5 decades. Now, it was on top of the United Launch Alliance's new Vulcan rocket. It was a big, powerful machine altogether. Astrobotics, Peregrine lunar lander, blasted off overnight from Florida's Cape Canaveral, and that's the Space Force Station, then successfully separated from its launch vehicle. And a few hours later, it began reporting technical malfunction, starting with an inability to orient Peregrine's top-mounted solar panels towards the sun, which is not good. That's to keep it on board, little battery topped up, and owing to the malfunction in its propulsion system. So this is a pretty serious thing. I think it's pretty fatal at this stage. I don't know where it's going to end up.
Well, they're looking at what science they can do. It looks, to all intents and purposes, although they haven't confirmed it yet, that the prospect of actually completing its mission, in as far as landing on the moon, is probably out of the question. It has lost a lot of propellant, and so they think that part is gone, although it hasn't been admitted. It was supposed to touch down on the moon on February 23rd, but it's very unlikely that will
We'll keep an eye on this, because they're currently assessing what alternative mission profiles that they can do, which might be feasible at this particular time. And as you mentioned there, February the 23rd was the time that it's supposed to reach the moon. So at this stage, China has successfully landed three times over the past decade, while India was the most recent to achieve the feat on its second attempt last year, and I remember the first one. And now the United States is turning up to the commercial sector to stimulate a broader lunar economy and ship its own hardware at a fraction of the cost. So they've been working quietly in the background to get a cheaper way of getting stuff up to the moon. So NASA paid Astrobotic more than $100 million for the task. We're talking serious cash here, aren't we? For something that's failed a little bit.
It's a pity about that. On the other hand, when you look at India had their... You were talking about the cost there. The Indian probe, which we'll talk about in a moment, the one that reached solar orbit. Well, when you say solar orbit, it's only 1.5 million kilometers from Earth at the moment. It's at one of the Lagrange points. But the cost of that is only estimated at $48 million American dollars. And, and the Indian space program is very ambitious. You may remember in August last year, they became the first country to land an uncrewed craft near the largely unexplored lunar South Pole, and only the fourth nation to land on the moon. That's an unmanned lander, of course. They became the first nation to put a craft into orbit around Mars in 2014, and their plan is to actually launch their own astronauts into Earth orbit this year, and along with Japan, they plan to send another probe to the moon by 2025 and an orbital mission to Venus also within the next 2 years. So they're very ambitious with their plans. I don't know whether you have any more information on their solar probe, except that it, after its 4 month journey, it did reach its parking orbit, shall we say, where it will. I think the plan is to study, coronal mass ejections, which, of course, which are massive explosions on the sun where billions of tons of ionized material are ejected from the sun. And if they face this way and they reach the Earth, they can cause a lot of damage to satellites and also to even ground electrical power grids. And, of course, they can cause some fabulously beautiful aurora, too.
Yep, and we love aurora. Doesn't matter where it comes from. So there we go. Now, Titan is in the news as from today. Seemingly, they've found these things called magic islands. And these are like honeycombed hydrocarbon icebergs. And they're more likely to be floating chunks of porous, frozen organic solids. This is from the new study. And as we know, the hazy orange atmosphere, 50% thicker than the Earth's and rich in methane and other carbon-based organic molecules and stuff like that as well. And its surface is covered with the dark dunes of an organic material and seas of liquid methane and ethane. Not a very pleasant place to be. And stranger yet,
a very cold place to be.
It would not be very pleasant at all. So in fact, it's just not worth going to. So scientists first spotted these magic islands in 2014 with the Cassini-Huygens mission, and have since been trying to figure out exactly what they are. And the previous study suggests that they could be phantom islands caused by waves or real islands made from suspended solids. So it's an interesting project that they're doing. They're not letting too much out to let us know what they're at. So floating solids, bubbles, nitrogen gases, With a closer look at the relationship between Titan's atmosphere, its liquid lakes, and solid materials deposited on the moon's surface reveal the cause of these mysterious islands. So that'll be interesting to watch over the coming months and years.
They think it says organic molecules precipitating out of the atmosphere but and onto the lakes and rivers, which are made of methane and ethane. Methane, of course, we would know it as the gas we burn in our homes to keep ourselves warm, but it's so cold on Titan that the methane is in liquid form. But because of the properties of ethane and methane, they think for these particular organic molecules to clump together and to actually float and to, for a specific period of time, they don't seem to disappear too quickly. They would have to be of a certain porosity.
Ooh,
like a sponge, sponges, and they would eventually soak up some of the ethane and slowly dissolve and eventually sink and disappear. So you have these, what they call the magic islands, and they appear for weeks or months at a time, and then they disappear.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text number and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. Also available live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast.
Yeah, similarly, China has successfully launched its Einstein probe satellite at 3:03 p.m. Beijing time, which we're probably 9 hours behind that. In
I think it's eight. But
eight to nine. It doesn't really matter. Funny, if you were in Australia, they go by half hour things because that place is so big as well. But seemingly they've successfully launched the probe, and the launch triggered immediate concern in Taiwan, where authorities issued emergency phone alerts, warning the public to please beware of your safety, just in case bits and pieces might come back down through the atmosphere and cause harm. But no, nothing has been reported yet. They used a big thing called the Long March 2C rocket, and the satellite entered its designated orbit, so everything seems to be A-OK for that just at the moment. And I want to sneak forward to April the 8th for you, Ben.
Oh,
and
yes,
if you're thinking about and wanting to go to see the eclipse-themed places in the US, it's creeping all the way down from the lower end of this sort of Mexico direction up to above New York is the path of totality. And if you're looking to do that, you want to start thinking. I know you have.
I'm the flight booked.
Yeah, and a big entourage to go with it.
That's another story.
Yeah. So the path of totality will be 115 miles wide and stretch 10,000 miles from the Pacific to the Atlantic Oceans over North America, making land Mexico departing Newfoundland. That's probably the easiest way of explaining it. So there are things to look out for when you're doing that. I had a little note or a list of all the bits and pieces. Not with the rookies. Oh, there it is. Yeah, I have it next ready to go. And if you haven't done it before, now you've done it. This is your fourth time.
This will be my fourth eclipse,
yes. Yeah, so the things to watch out for, and sort of for the rookies who have never done it before as well, booking an event in the wrong place is one of those big things that they would do, because they think they're going to be in the totality path, but unfortunately not. And millions made amateur mistakes during the last solar eclipse to cross the US on August the 21st in 2017, and they just didn't get to see because they guessed the wrong place. Obsessing about the wrong things is another thing as well. You must be in the path of totality to experience anything approaching spectacular. So don't go out the 115 miles or the 75 miles each side of the path, so you must know exactly where you are. And if you live in the path of totality, as about 40 million people do in North America,
you could make a fortune on Airbnb.
You certainly could. You're among the luckiest people ever to see this. The most eclipse chasers would give their right arm for such a privilege, and you're giving your right and your left and your both feet.
My wallet.
And the wallet, yeah. And not getting to your observation site early enough is another fault that people do. They say, oh, we've just missed it, so you have to get there. Another one, which I suppose if you're of that type of person, shouting at the clouds and getting upset. that is one of the big things, seemingly. Forgetting, of course, to bring binoculars. Now,
well, don't forget your solar filters.
Yeah.
And a lot of people try to take... One of the best pieces of advice I got was don't spend your time looking at it through a lens or a camera. First of all, there are millions, probably, of better photographers than you who will be able to take excellent pictures, and you will... They'll be available on the internet. Now, it's nice to have your own picture, for sure, but don't spend time fluting around with cameras and trying to get things right and miss the whole show. Just enjoy it. In this case, where I'm going to be 4 minutes and 20 seconds of totality, and it's a great experience. It's an experience you never forget.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Just want to say hello to a new listener to the Astronomy Show.
Yeah.
First time listener, you're most welcome on board. And they're a Portsmouth fan. I presume that's soccer.
Yeah, it will be. Funny enough, I'm a Leeds United fan as well, so that goes way back into the 60s.
Leeds United? Aren't you a Aston Villa?
No, I'm not.
Should we do a sports program instead?
Mark Anthony, who does the program just before us on the travel, he's a great big Aston Villa fan.
That's true.
T-shirts and all that sort of stuff. So, looking forward to going to Shadowland and Sun Valley in Texas, Mr. Ben, on the 8th of April. Any of you are thinking about going, get yourself ready. Make sure you know where you're going.
I do.
I think you discussed something with me as well, that somebody that you know over there wanted to stay at home, which is out on the edge of where the totality would be, and he was quite happy to do this, but I think you said to him, we're going traveling.
Well, right, actually, my friend has a nephew in Waco, Texas, and they said, which is in the path of totality. I said, they can watch it from here.
Yeah.
Said, yeah, but it's only 2 minutes, 20 seconds. If we travel less than an hour onto the center path, we'll get another 2 minutes or so.
Yeah, anyway, so look forward to that.
Anyway,
we always welcome new listeners. And the WhatsApp and the text 0871791032 is the number to ring there. Aurora hunting came up on the news line earlier on today. And what's it like to chase the Northern Lights via a dramatic coastline on a cruise ship? That's a lot of things to do with that. And then the next few years are predicted to be the best for seeing the Northern Lights, due to the high solar activity during the current solar cycle at the moment. Now, I did go to see it in Tromsø, inside the Arctic Circle. And probably the mistake I made is just for the timing is that the moon came in sort of mid-evening. It was a half-lit moon at the time, and it did knock out a few of the lights. But cameras are great for catching things like this. And I did get to see quite a number of Northern Lights. And the other thing as well is maybe stay away from the big towns and villages and get way, way out into as dark a sky as you possibly can. Now, there are a lot of trips and things like that. And one good way is to go and see it by the Hurtigruten Coastal Express, which is a ship that follows the Norwegian coast all the way up as far as you can see, up to North Cape nearly, I think. And we still have plenty of time if you want to do that, but one of the things is make sure that the moon is out of view for most of the evening and just rising. Get a new moon or a very old moon and make sure the moon is not in the sky, because it does make a huge difference when you're trying to hunt for the Northern Lights.
Thank you, John, and thanks to Alan, too, for his text. Alan in Kildare, reminding us about the Japanese Space Agency and getting their first images from their X-ray telescope, which I don't have any update on at the moment. John, let's talk, before we go, we've only a few minutes left, let's talk about one of my other favourite subject beside astronomy is
food.
Gastronomy.
Yeah. Imagine blasting off on a multi-year voyage to Mars. Funny enough, Mark earlier on mentioned it, and he had a number of listeners texting in, what would they like to eat? And all the silly things came up, like Mars bars and what's they call them, Space Raiders, and
Space Raiders,
space dust, and all that sort of stuff. But they're trying to give you a nice taste of a a diet of prepackaged meals that might taste in some way good. And, of course, astronauts in space burn more calories than humans here on Earth and require micronutrients such as calcium to stay healthy because their bone mass disappears and all that sort of stuff as well. So there's big, big experiments going on just at the moment to find what people would like to eat. And I remember going to Tim Peake in the Borgosh Theatre, and Heston Blumenthal was one of his cooks, and they were preparing his meals for about 2 years just beforehand in cans, like beef and pie and all sorts of things. And of course, all the other astronauts, when he opened them up, wanted to share, but they're not allowed. There was one fella here who lost a couple of tomatoes a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yes. The story of the missing tomatoes, yes.
Yep, there were actually two. They thought there was only one. And so Frank Rubio was blamed quite quickly for eating the tomatoes, which he didn't do, and we can see the evidence of the wrinkled things found behind the bookcase up there.
Yes, it's the silly season, mm-hmm. indeed, because Alan is back on suggesting, of course, you've guessed it, Galaxy Chocolate and Milky Way.
There you go. Well, Milky Ways were mentioned earlier on, I think, as well. So lots and lots, but that's not the type of food that they're looking to do. So now we've a couple of minutes to go. Which is a nice thing to be, a nice position to be in. Now, the Draconid meteor shower last weekend, now I did go to try and see that. Now, admittedly, I went out a little bit earlier, probably about 10 o'clock, where they're quite low in the sky, and where we are, the light pollution is not, it's quite high, and you have to really wait till about, definitely after midnight to about 2 a.m., which I didn't do, and I didn't get to see many. I did get to see a couple, all right. So, the way that the plough is running at the moment over to the North Star, that's the line of where they come in, a little bit lower, mm-hmm. and about 15, 20 degrees up in the sky. And then as the Earth spins, they get higher and higher. So fortunately, I was having a power snooze.
Unfortunately, I didn't see any of them.
Yeah, that's it. It's just the way that they are. They're just quite a little bit lower than normal meteors and meteorites and everything like that, where they tend to be straight up in the sky. But they're still, we're up to maybe 100 meteors per hour, which unfortunately I didn't get to see. If you did get to see any, just give us a shout.
Yes, indeed. You can always write to us. astronomy@dublincityfm.ie is our email, and 087-179-1032 is the text and WhatsApp number. Just want to mention before we go, even at a minute or two, I see Virgin Galactics, and they have officially announced the opening of its Galactic 06 flight window on January 26, 2024, and this mission will mark the 11th space flight of Virgin Galactic. They've had a relatively successful year, which includes six orbital missions in just 6 months. There will be it's mostly based or aimed on at space tourists, and there will be a number of them in this flight, one from Ukraine and California, one from Texas, actually two from California, one from Austria, and one from somewhere else, yeah, two from California. One from Texas, one from California, two from California, one from Texas, one from Austria. Yeah. Do we know their names? No, we don't. They're referred to as Astronaut 023, Astronaut 024, blah, blah, 252 and 26. So we don't know much about it, but the pilots and the co-pilots, and I think there's four of them going up on this, and they're more experienced pilots. I still don't know how much one costs for a 9 or 10 minute suborbital flight. Would be nice. I think it's a mere 200,000 euro or pounds. Not sure though.
Doesn't really matter. Plus or minus a couple here or there.
Who cares?
Euro. And all that sort of stuff, or dollars, whatever way you're doing it. So anyway, that's about it, Ben.
Yes, thank you very much. And thanks to our texters too, of course. But that's all the time we have this evening. Don't forget our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to John for his news items. Thanks to James Sweeney and Conor Lennon for making the show available on astronomy.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of The Astronomy Show. And now it's music all the way here on 103.2 Dublin City FM until 2 a.m. Because up next we have Bren Linnet with Threads, then from 10 p.m. to midnight, Nigel Word with Ear to the Globe, his world music mix. And from midnight till 2 a.m., Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul with a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be here with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.